will reopen the subcommittee on general government. Yesterday we were in work session on 5525, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and we had an opportunity to work over budget notes, and we need to go ahead and come back to the budget notes and then some modification. We've had some discussion with members of the committee and members of staff, and so at this time we have a new copy of page 2 before us, which contains all 8 of the budget notes. I'd like to spend some time on those, and we will let Susie Gordon go ahead and introduce the changes and modifications that there have been.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In budget note 1, there was discussion yesterday around the sentence that included the agent's compensation offset. I'm recommending that you just remove that part of the sentence that's crossed out in your copy, and then the next sentence, just modify that to include that the commission shall identify implementation standards that are included but are not limited to directing and overall operation, minimizing the negative impact on the general, on the state general fund, and minimizing the impact on competitively sensitive markets, et cetera. That is a part of the report that, or the study that the agency will look at. That doesn't necessarily mean that those are the only standards that they might want to identify or present to the emergency board in their report, but those are some to be considered.
Senator Schroeder, recognized.
Mr. Chair, I had some problems just with the wording of this note and the intention. I would feel much better about it. It was clearly understood here that the agency can react with flexibility as it deals with things. And so long as it makes an attempt to deal with the issues in the budget note, that's satisfactory.
I want to make sure that they recognize what the limits of their rulemaking authority is at present, and I think they have. Can we invite Tammy Erickson just to come forward and for the record make sure that she's comfortable that they have adequate rulemaking authority to do the things that are necessary that we're requesting that they study and identify?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we would have, like I said at our last visit, we do have the authority to allow our liquor stores to sell beer and wine. We do not have the authority to allow them to sell on Sunday, for example. That's a statutory requirement. Sundays or holidays is prohibited. That would have to be a statutory change. Hours of operation during other days, we have the ability to modify that. Much of this stuff, we do have the authority to do. There are a few things that are in statute that would require changes.
Senator Schroeder, you feel comfortable with that explanation relative to budget note 1?
Well, no, because the budget note doesn't talk about their authority. You just come up as a report they're going to be making back to us. And we're asking them to report on a lot of things, and we're asking them to establish implementation standards so they're not only reporting, but they're going to implement the blasted report before we even know what it is. In those implementation standards, they're addressing hours of operation, a whole lot, including the percentage of self-spacing for non-distilled spirits. All of those things sound really hard to do, to identify implementation standards to do all of those things. I don't know, they need a lot of flexibility in responding to this. Some of these things they might be able to do, and some things they're probably not going to be able to do. I think they could address the whole thing generally, maybe, in a report. But specifically, for instance, percentage of shelf facing, well, if they go to these packaged liquor stores, and that includes a great big Safeway store, the percentage is going to be different of the shelving for the distilled spirits in the Safeway store than it is in the 7-Eleven store or in some much smaller store. I don't know.
Any other comments from members of the committee regarding that concern? I guess we've worked that budget note over, and it's like a letter. When I'm done with the letter and they bring it back to me and ready for signature, I just want to change one or two things on it each time. And it does discuss how they would implement many of the changes. I think that it's contemplated that much of the information, such as hours of operation, those kinds of things may well be available from industry, and that industry could provide for them studies nationwide as to what may happen on some of these issues. And the industry, I see, and we've got a portion of some of the language a little bit later on relative to the inventory reduction. I see industry playing a key factor in being a decision, not necessarily a decision maker, but assisting with information upon which they could be relying upon to make a decision as a commission. And I think that information is out there. It's not terribly difficult to get.
Sure. Let me ask this question of you and of the director. Does the commission have the authority to extend the sale of distilled liquors to packaged liquor stores? Can you do that to all of them? Do you have that authority? Is that an authority that the state would have to give in some other way, like a bill or something, to pass the legislation?
Representative Butler, Senator Trow, we would be able to establish additional non-exclusive liquor agencies, whereby we do have alcohol in a package store. I don't think there's any inclination at this point to jump into that. I believe that the there is a major public policy issue about proliferation of distilled spirits in a large number of licensed operations. One of the founding principles of the Liquor Control Act was that Oregon shall show a preference for lighter products and exert tighter control over products of high alcohol content. I think we would be remiss if we were to simply immediately establish hundreds of non-exclusive agencies. That's something I believe the legislature has to make a decision about, and probably would need to establish a new license type. We would tread very cautiously, I believe, on that.
This it's a little bit of a difference between 47 stores that the state controls and putting a little bit of wine and beer sales in those, and then conversely, as offset to that, to give every packaged liquor store the right to sell the state liquor. Those things don't weigh the same.
I believe that the co-chairs intent with this budget note, this first budget note, is to give the agency a great deal of flexibility in how they go about that. That's certainly what they've communicated to me.
Is this their budget note?
They've agreed to it.
Oh, it's not the chair's budget note. It's the co-chair's budget.
Mr. Chair, the chair initiated this budget note and ran it by the co-chair for approval. Yes.
And it's not my intention in this process that immediately that we would, it was my understanding that it would take legislation to immediately start dispensing distilled spirits at all of the other, as Mrs. Erickson has indicated, at all of the other stores that sell packaged beers and wines right now. It would require, I think, actual legislation. I would have thought so anyway. And perhaps other than places like Field, Oregon, perhaps, and places where there are no other locations for that. Representative Trepp, Representative Leonard, did that language relative to the profit exclusion, did that by eliminating that language, does that satisfy your opinion?
Good, I appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Okay, and I appreciated that insight because we really struggled wondering what to do there, and what it did was it gave us an opportunity to implement it or to put in the language to minimize the negative impact on the state's general fund. And that's what we were trying to do without saying an offset of sales one way versus the other, and try and micromanage 243 state liquor dispensaries right now would have been horrendous, and so I'm grateful for the input which we've received. Are there any other additional comments or concerns? Senator Lane.
Thank you very much. We discussed this number one extensively yesterday. I think this is much better balance of course, since that this is a study issue at this point, that the state agency may be in the sometime in the future look at some beer and wine specialty product, and possibly with a legislative action, and that the tax report might be able to get some specialty products. Moving into one way to another, why couldn't we include the study on possible privatization of the OLCC? Because the intention from in there, if I'm not proposing privatization, it is only study issue. Things is going back and forth either way.
Thank you very much, Senator Lim. I did get held back in a little bit by the co-chairs when I tried to give a time certain by which some of this would be done so that we could look at the potential for privatization before the next legislative assembly, and they felt like that was dictating rule as opposed to budget mode. So, and I appreciate what you're saying, but I do believe that much of the information that is contained in budget notes 1 through 8 will probably give us by the time we're done with this, and the additionally some of the information particularly that will be generated off of the new computer system which Mrs. Gordon will talk to us about in a few moments. Some of that information from the computer system and the information we'll be able to use for management purposes may give us a very excellent idea how we could move to a strictly dispensing operation on behalf of the state so that all of the distilled spirits could be privatized out in the private industry, and the only thing the state does is it acts as a clearinghouse and a control agency, because that is their function and mission, is that of control. So I think if
would it remain a wholesaler?
I would envision that now that it could easily remain a wholesaler, a single location, but it wouldn't necessarily have to, and I wouldn't want to try and second guess the results of where that would go. But we didn't include the a mandatory study. One of the other concerns that I had, and that was expressed to us by the OLCC, was that the more that we require of them to study and to do, the more they will divert some of their other resources into these studies as opposed to part of their true mission of control. And I didn't want to do that. Again, we bordered on rulemaking for them, and we bordered on some of the other issues that I think became a little bit untenable in relationship to some of those things that you're referring to relative to privatization. But certainly there is an opportunity to, from the information, to be able to glean through these budget modes to examine privatization, and in the next legislative assembly, there could certainly be information presented in that regard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I make one more comment.
Certainly, Senator Lowe.
This is that the budget note number one, it seems to me one step closer to the privatization, eventually half liquor store sales beer and the pasta store sales some half liquor a little bit, and eventually it's moving into to that direction as I see it. If we do that, then it might as well just to study any possibility of privatization in the future that the California others are doing. I don't support privatization at this point, but I'm talking about to study in case if there's a possibility in the future.
Thank you very much, Senator Merriman. And let's continue on with the budget notes, and I think we'll see that there will be, particularly as we get into the budget itself, to finalize the budget itself. Ms. Jordan?
Mr. Chair, yesterday I went through the rest of the budget notes. There were a couple technical typographical changes that I made. Those are highlighted in the bold. If you adopt the Legislative Fiscal Office's recommendation, you will be adopting a budget that is $4.7 million over the current service level, and it will fund 7 policy packages that were requested by the agency. It will include certificates of participation, funding $2.5 million in information system improvements and facilities, and agents' compensation will be continued at 8.54% of the total liquor sales, as well as the ongoing computer maintenance support for the merchandise and computer system, and 4 permanent FTE for enforcing the legal drinking age and controlling the availability and reducing the illicit sale of alcohol.
Are there any questions, Representative Hansen?
No questions. I'd be prepared to move the recommendations in budget notes 1 through 8.
Okay, we have a motion.
I have a question.
Senator Ferry really has a question.
On the budget notes.
Budget note change, Chairman. Relative to the inventory reduction program and the absence of adverse impact on lighting.
Yes, sir. The penultimate sentence indicating that the inventory reduction program should not adversely impact Oregon-based producers and of distilled spirits.
Mr. Chairman, coming from the Senate District 28, which is housing at the Hood River community, I would be very remiss if I didn't call attention to the fact that we don't want to have adversely affect any Oregon producer.
Be it so noted for the record, and we further tried to examine other issues that were being discussed for the $2.9 million reduction of inventory to try and make sure that it was broadly spread throughout the markets, and it felt by the commission that they're not going to target any single industry, but we appreciate your sensitivity and have included the fact that we do not want to adversely impact any Oregon-based producers of distilled spirits. As a matter of fact, I think that the provision in the provision in statute that asks that we give preference to some extent to Oregon producers of distilled spirits.
Well, Mr. Chairman, having personally subsidized and given preference to these Oregon distillers for a good portion of my adult life, I hate to leave ground now.
You'll just have
to try harder.
Yeah. I think I do that too often with the purchases. What I'm wondering is what does that really mean? If we're going to be reducing inventory, and let's say we have plenty of Oregon-based, within the inventory itself, of Oregon-based vodka and gin, and do you mean that they have to continue to buy from those companies even though they got lots of it and they need to reduce what they've got?
I don't think it means that they would overbuy, but would you like to comment on that?
Yes, Chairman Butler, Senator Trow. We have performance-based criteria. A product will be discontinued if it does not meet performance standards, and that's sales in the marketplace. if a new product it wants to come into the inventory, they have to make the case based on sales in other states or marketing plans or that kind of thing. We do have a statutory requirement to encourage the development of Oregon industry. I believe that we would balance those factors. We always do. We do give a very careful look to Oregon products when they're introduced into the marketplace. It is very important, I think, to use market performance. That's the way a business should be run, and I believe that we should continue it. But I do not believe that we are going to seriously adversely affect any of our homegrown Oregon industries.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator.
We don't want you to.
We don't.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And could you, do you have any idea what the percentage of the total sale of the spirit items with Oregon products out of total sale?
Senator Lim, I wouldn't have that off the top of my head.
Okay. It is very important. I need to know what if I could get some
information. I'd be very happy to provide you that information.
Just want to get some idea. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
Senator,
just for the clarification, I guess the clarification that we heard is good, but I guess it comes down to a matter of opinion, and I understand performance based is everything. Some of the packaging issues are the most important issues. And eliminating one package that happens to be very important may seem to be a small issue in the overall picture, but to an Oak Oregon producer, it could be a huge impact for them. So I guess I would just continue to call attention to the issue that some of these specialty producers, and I'm referring to the not to the Hood River situation, but the smaller specialty producers, never die by the packaging. And unit sales might not be great, but it may be their entire production. So in the inventory control issues and all of our efficiencies, we're aiming at our efficiencies at services and supplies, not materials and supplies, not at services. And, you know, we're, for better or worse, we're in the business of retail sales, and that's in taking that business. And supply and selection are key criteria, so we don't want to eliminate the selection. And that's what I'm referring to when I talk about adverse impact. So I want to make that clear for the record.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Senator. It's been moved by Representative Hansen that we go ahead and approve the budget notes and recommendations for the technical adjustments by the Legislative Fiscal Office. Are there any objections?
I'm not enthusiastic about the budget note number one, and if there's somewhere I could vote for the budget and indicate my opposition to that budget note, I'd like to be able to do that, but I can speak out.
Okay.
I'm not going to vote for the budget.
Okay. With reservations expressed by good Senator Crowe, we'll go ahead then and approve the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendations with budget notes 1 through 8. Okay, let's proceed then with Ms. Jordan.
Mr. Chair, I'm wanting to go through the spreadsheet that was handed out yesterday. I didn't make additional copies for today, but I hope you still have them. Going through the base budget, starting at $63.8 million and 214.02 FTE, the department adds or subtracts for their vacancy factor 21,000. They have program adjustments of $1.5 million. That is the backing out of one-time costs related to their merchandise computer system, Y2K, and their permanent sales core program. Their cost of goods and services is increased $5 million. The bulk of that has to do with the increase in agent compensation of $4 million during the biennium because of the increase in liquor sales. And then they have revised their base budget by $1.2 million. That is, again, for agents' comp because of the increase in liquor sales from their base budget. So their current law budget is $58.4 million and 214.02 FTE.
Is that raised to the current service level? Is that appropriate?
Yes.
Their current service level?
Yeah.
The recommendation of legislative fiscal office is the current service level of $68,470,165 and $114.02 full-time equivalent position. Are there any objections to the current service level budget? Being none, order the current service level. Program office.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are 10 program option packages. The fiscal office is recommending all of those packages except for package number 203, the regulatory seller program. I'm recommending that be deferred for because it is attached to substantive legislation that has not passed. And I don't think it is intended to pass through the legislature. The package 150, reducing central hearing panel of $104,902, that is being acted on in another bill. And finally, well, those are the program option packages. I'm also recommending that you reduce the budget by $9,180 for recognizing the efficiencies gained for Attorney General charges, and that we shift the cost of credit cards from their operating budget under the expense limitation to their non-limited budget where it is more appropriate. For a total budget then of $71,938,777 and $219.03 FTE.
You've heard the recommendation of Legislative Fiscal Officer Mr. Jordan. Are there any comments, questions, or concerns with the Legislative Fiscal Recommendation?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's very clearly the effect of the 201. It's a 4.4 FTE.
Mr. Chair, Package 201 increases their regulation activities related to underage drinking, and it also implements their business regulation and business system to, well, I'm sorry, that doesn't, add 4 FTE to their regulation inspection program.
So it's a 4 FTE rule for all underage, that's a stigmatization program, is that it?
That's part of what they would do. I'd let the agency explain the detail, yeah.
Thank you.
This package addresses our priority enforcement programs. Those are underage drinking, visibly intoxicated persons, and neighborhood livability. You have a budget note in here that asks us to balance our program. We would use that budget note to ensure that we have programs that also address the minor purchaser and the adult furnisher.
Okay.
Any other questions? Senator Curley,
You're losing some FTE, and I think we're asking you to do some additional more things. I think maybe some of the FTE was reduced in the governor's budget. But what about the level of staffing? Do you have enough to do what this budget envisions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, if you ask my opinion, I don't think we have enough staff. Our original request to the governor was for 14 additional FTE. Our workload increase has skyrocketed in the 90s, and our staff has decreased. So we will continue to have a workload gap. We'll deal with it the best we can.
Are you letting go because of FTE reductions, anybody?
No. Mr. Chair, Senator Cho, I believe these reductions relate to the central hearing panel, which
transfer.
This is a transfer, yeah.
25-25, Are there other questions or comments? Representative Hanson.
I'll be pleased, not necessarily pleased, I'll be voting for this. I think it represents a lot of work. We've addressed the issues the best we can within the parameters that we can work with. The net result, though, is going to be our aspirations for the agency aren't going to be met. There's still going to be a disconnect between some of the neighborhood issues. I don't think we'll get to where we really need to be in terms of keeping alcohol out of the hands of minors. But I think we can get started, and we can start addressing these issues and may even be able to make improvements on where we are now. But I don't think we're going to get to where we are until we actually are able to increase staff and put more money back into the agency.
I have a bill for you to vote for on the House floor in just a few minutes. Representative Hanson, 2140, the Responsible Vendor Program, will address exactly that. So we hope that it does anyway.
Yes, sir. As I see it yesterday, the total inventory is around 1.2, but 12 million, $13 million, right? And then almost $3 million, that's a reduction of the inventory, which is about 25% or so. My next question is, how many people involved in the inventory controlling?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lynn, that's a little hard for me to say off the top of my head, because a lot of different people will be involved in a lot of different aspects of it. We have a couple of people on our purchasing staff that will be involved, our manager of distribution. We have four district representatives that manage each manage about 60 stores. It will involve the commission. A lot of these are policy issues, and I think maintaining it being a little tougher, if you will, on insisting that products meet performance standards. It will really involve the whole agency. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head the individual FTE that would be involved in that project.
We'll follow up. The point is, when we try to control 1.3 and the $13 million inventory, it might involve more people. Since it's a reduction of about 25% or $3 million worth, it could involve less people to control the inventory. We might be able to reduce in that area. Just a common sense on that.
Karen Butler, Senator Lim, we have got so much to do. I don't think that, we're going to need less people. Really, one person for 60 stores, we don't do an adequate job managing them now. So I think it would be, it would be tough to do with less. Inventory management is a pretty labor-intensive process if you're really going to do it right.
Certainly hope the computers, again, will help us to do some of that management. So we Senator Ferrioli at this time moves the LFO recommended budget of $71,938,777 to a 219.02 full-time equivalent position. Is there any objections? Being none, we'll show order and we'll move that with a two pass recommendation to the full Ways and Means Committee. And let's see, Secretary Oley, one question made that motion. Would you carry that, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
By adopting the total budget of $71.9 million, you have also included in that $1.4 million for non-limit. And I just want to make sure that you understand that when the amendment comes up, the total budget will stay $70.4 million because of the non-limited portion. You have acted properly.
Thank you, very kindly. And let's see, Representative, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I serve at your place. As long as you don't use any visual aids on the floor. For this particular budget, would you like to carry this to the House floor?
Yes,
I'm going to say if he doesn't use any visual aids for a couple hours before. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I want to say how much I appreciate the interest and attention of this committee. I have really thought that this was a very good process, that we've spent a lot of time on some very important issues, and I think we've come up with some good public policy solutions, and I really wanted to express my appreciation to you.
Thank you, and we do appreciate
this very much. I just want to say thanks to Sam Edison and the commissioner and Abadia, you know, all the members, they have done a good job. And working with us closely, once you know, we appreciate that very much.
And Mr. Chairman, relative to a comment made by the committee staff, this has been the first time during the legislative session that many of the members of this subcommittee have acted properly.
We'll now go into a public hearing on Senate Bill 189 related to the 187. Thank you for that. What are the competitive inclusions that you need to talk about?
I don't understand. Yeah, I have something to do with this one. There's movement under foot to ban me from serving anymore.
187. Please, you're so welcome. Good to have you back. We welcome you to our committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jim Hill, State Treasurer. I'd like to thank the subcommittee for giving me this opportunity to appear today. And I'd like to also give a special thanks to the chair of the subcommittee for his interest in this issue. Quite often, words like crisis are overused to draw attention to an issue. But there is a genuine crisis in our country and our state as far as retirement is concerned. In the 1995 legislative session, I approached the legislature and asked them to form a task force to look at the condition of retirement in the state of Oregon. And I'd just like to share some of the findings that the task force came up with for the retirement issue. We're fourth in the nation in non-mortgage consumer debt. The average income of Oregonians is lower than the national average. Businesses that employ less than 100 employees make up 98% of Oregon firms and employ 54% of employees, yet only 27% of them have any type of employer-sponsored pension plan. Most of the jobs, many of the jobs that we have had in our growing economy have been lower paying jobs without retirement benefits. And the reasons for this, we have a dynamic, challenging economy. The relationship between the employer and employee has changed dramatically. In previous generations, people worked for the same company or organization for most of their working lives, and at the end, they automatically had a retirement. What they had to do was basically just stick with it, and their retirement was theirs. Now people change jobs at least seven times. People now change careers even four times during their lifespan. And I think we're at the point where there's a genuine question as to whether there's any such thing as job security at all. There has been a shift away from defined benefit plans to defined contribution plans, and I'd like to point out for people who feel that defined contribution plans are the answer to most of our problems, there were some statistics that indicate that most people, even in their 401k plans, have their money, and this is the vast majority, have their money in money market funds, not even invested in stocks or bonds. So that underlies the importance of why education is needed. But quite simply, the message that I think we have to give people today with regard to retirement is that you are on your own. Nationally, 7 out of 10 people don't even know how much money they need for retirement. Many people want to depend on Social Security. Social Security is estimated to supply only 40% of what people need to have a successful retirement. So the conclusion of the task force was this, was that there should be a concerted, long-term public education and awareness program on the issue of retirement. And this is really what Senate Bill 187 is designed to promote. What this bill is about is enabling people to help themselves. And there's no better place to lead this effort than the Office of the State Treasurer, because the Treasurer is designated as the Chief Financial Officer of the state. And I want to tell you, this is not just an idea that we came up with. We, of course, asked for the task force in 1985. But I'd like to share with you what we've actually done and what can be done under a format like this bill. We had what was called Project Green Purse. It was a seminar on planning for retirement and personal finance. We had 2,600 women showed up for this conference. To give you an idea of comparison, when the First Lady held her town hall on Social Security in 10 cities around the country, the combined attendance in those 10 cities was 2,000. We had 2,600 here in Oregon. This was not just a Portland event. The main facility was the Portland Convention Center, but we used the EdNet network to basically via satellite send this out to a number of sites all around the state. And I guess most importantly, there were no tax dollars involved with this. I took it upon myself to go out and raise the money from the private sector, and not only from the private sector, but we've got money from the U.S. Department of Labor under their Savers Act. So what I want to highlight is that it's getting to be a buzzword now, the word partnerships. But partnerships really are very important. I think that at least the longer that I'm in government, the more I see that there are limits as to what government can do. And so we partnered with the private sector, and we partnered with the public sector as well. But this is a situation where I think we either inform and enable our citizens now, or we're going to have to pay them later. If people are not prepared for retirement and they get to a certain age when they cannot work, their only place to turn is to the government. In my own personal situation, let me just say that I watched my mother by herself as a single parent work her way out of extreme financial conditions. She worked, saved, and invested her way out of those conditions. And there were times when there were times when she could not pay the bills, but what she did, she always saved some money. And this is a time before there were mutual funds and all of the kind of investment vehicles that we have now. But the point of it is that a lot of the money that she saved, she invested in me, in my education. And that's the kind of opportunity that I want, really, for other Oregonians. So what we've come up with is a bill that does not ask for any tax dollars. But I want to try to emphasize to you, when we had this conference, when the 2,600 people showed up for the conference, I mean, they're demanding another conference. I mean, there's enough things out there for people to invest in. The problem is that people don't know what to do. Now, if we are going to really try to put people's financial destiny in their own hands, we've got to give them information. The 401k plans. My understanding is that with the 401k plans, as prolific as they are, my understanding is that 70 or 80 some odd percent of the money is still in a money market fund. They're not even invested in stocks and bonds, and that's an opportunity cost. And what that shows is it's just really a lack of knowledge and a lack of education. And so the Treasury, and let me, as the president of the National Association of State Treasurers, Project Green Purse, Every Woman's Money Conference, I've taken that to my colleagues, the other treasurers, and now 15 other treasurers around the country are going to be putting on such activities. There are organizations now with support from your Fortune 500 labor groups and everything else that are trying to encourage people to save. But I do know this, is that not the government or anyone else could have helped my mother out of the situation that she was in. Somehow she had a sense for investing, and she certainly, goodness knows, was a saver. So, excuse me, what this bill is about really is giving focus in the treasurer's office and giving the treasurers, whoever may hold that office, give them an opportunity to serve, to not only perform the duties as outlined by law, but to show financial leadership. It is always, the economy has always been the issue, whether in good times or bad, and I think what we should be doing is giving, one of the best things that government can do is really give people information to help themselves, and that's what this bill is about. I do appreciate the consideration of it. Quite frankly, I thought that this bill would languish. I guess I should make some comments. The things that have come back to me about politics and so forth as to why the bill was not moving and so forth, and I just want to, again, I want to especially thank the chair for his interest in this issue. And the things that I have been able to do, the things that we have been able to do in our office in terms of education, I'm doing those things. But if we really want to try to give our citizens information where they can really help themselves, because this is a pay me now or pay me later situation. If people aren't prepared for retirement, the government is going to have to step in and pay for it. So in the other kinds of things that we're doing, I'm involved with the Save for America program. That's a program for grade schoolers and middle schoolers. It's for savings bonds. The partnership issue. Schools partner with banks. There's a bank day, and these kids every week get into the habit of coming in and with their little passbook, and they save their money. And the thing is, and I've been to a number of schools where the kids didn't have any money, but the thing is they would come up sometimes with change. One kid with a nickel to add with a dollar that the bank donates as part of this program. But the thing of it is that the principals of the schools, and I'm talking specifically now the Light Valley School down by Cottage Grove, talked about what a difference it has made in the morale of the school. And that the kids now see that they're doing something for their own future. And the main thing is the habit. We are a culture of spenders, and we have to start giving people the idea that it is good to save. And if people will do that, and I mean my vision for the Save for America program, I mean if you just imagine every young person saving that amount of money. Look, by the time they're as old as I am, and I'm 52, by the time they're as old as I am, they will have their own money. They won't be worrying. They won't be in poverty. They can save enough money to invest in their own lives, their education, and all things. And by these kids have dreams, poor or not, and they're going to move ahead with it. And the thing of it is give them the tools so they can do things to have their lives the way that they want. And then one of the ways, of course, one of the most important things is doing that is to have enough money. And if you get people into the habit of saving when they're young, listen, I will tell you that you will not need as much government services to take care of people because they will be able to take care of themselves. And with that, Mr. Chair, seems I'm getting a little, but you all have to go.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Are there any issues that we need to take care of? Are there any serious objections? You've all received the fiscal on that. There's no fiscal impact directly to the state or the industry. Can we move into a work session?
Absolutely.
At this point, we'll move to the work session on Senate Bill 187.
Sure.
Senator Crowe?
We'll move to Senate Bill 187 to the Ways and Means Committee. We'll do pass recommendation.
So move that we move to 187, Senate Bill 187. We'll do pass recommendation to full Ways and Means. Any objections? So ordered, and with a due pass recommendation, with my delight, I can carry it to the full Ways and Means and to the House. Senator Lem, would you like to do that?
And thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll stand at a little desk until we can come back from the call of the House.
How long are you going to go?
We've got just a vote on the gas causing trouble. What we got?
That?
Yeah.
I'm not going to turn the thing with up.
A subcommittee of the Ways and Means General Government Subcommittee. So we are on Senate Bill 187. I'm sorry. We're on Senate Bill 156. Modifies the amount of certain application certificates. License registration for next week's table of the State Board of Accountancy. We invite Karen DeLorenzo, Executive Director of the Board of Accountancy, to come forward. If you would please, Ms. DeLorenzo. Mr. Armstrong, if you'd like to come forward as well as a member of the Board of Accountancy, would you like to come forward? Thank you so much for coming today. We're sorry for the a conundrum. Mr. Lorenzo, would you go ahead and fill us in what the effect of the Senate Bill 156 is, please?
Certainly. Chair Butler, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Karen DeLorenzo, Administrator of the Board of Accountancy. And Senate Bill 156 supports the budget that you passed. I think one of your very first meetings this session. And it's the few bills that we require to support the current service level of the budget. Right now, I think the budget is sitting over there with funds unscheduled until this bill passes.
Okay. And so the total of the budget that has been passed is unfunded. It's $282,000 for the next biennium. Is that correct?
Chair Butler, that's correct. Okay.
Are there questions of Mr. Langel, Senator Cole?
The accountancy members who pay these fees are willing to pay the increase?
Representative Butler and Senator Trill, yes, they are. They're supportive of the budget.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lamb is recognized.
And then most is the $7,300, then it should be that the in 1 year. $700,000, something like that. Why the budget is only $382,000?
Chair Butler, Senator Lim, the fees for the accountants are $150. Well, this would bring them from $100 to $150. It's a 2-year registration cycle.
Oh, 2 years?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a pretty good deal.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions of Mr. Lorenzo? I need to make sure that it's understood that I have potential conflict of interest as a as one of the certificate holders for the State of Oregon. So the records reflect that potential conflict of interest.
Chair, do you want promotion now? Or you
let's go ahead in the work session if there is no further discussion in the public session, and we'll move then to work session Senate Bill 156 and call on Dallas Lang to
okay. Thank you, Chairman. As you know, this is Senate Bill 156.
in concept, it was approved by this committee during the testimony and the budget hearing for the Board of Accountancy. The bill was passed out, the state board budget bill was passed out, and the Department of Administrative Services has agreed to schedule these funds pending passage of this bill. Again, it's all other funds or other general funds, and the committee did pass out the budget in its entirety. But you have the fiscal impact, and this is for the capital involving, and this will allow them to essentially to a service level with a few minor enhancements that they've got to make today. Okay, we can allow them to meet the obligations of the budget pass.
I move that we accept the legislative fiscal recommendation and send Senate Bill 166 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
So moved by Senator Stroh that we accept the legislative fiscal office recommendation and that we send the Senate Bill 156 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections to the motion? If there are none, then we will order and we will carry that to the full Ways and Means. Let's see. Can I carry that for Ways and Means? Can I do that? My colleagues here.
Oh, there you go.
382,000. I think I could do
that. Your conflict.
I'm happy to be right up front. To the Senate, Senator Trill. Okay. And I could also carry that to the House if there's no objections. We need to carry the fireman's bill.
Crutchfield's all the fireman's bill.
Yeah, but I provide visual aids for you.
That's the problem.
Sharon, again, on behalf of the CPA of the State of Oregon and the other professionals that have done it for their great services over these years, we do express our gratitude and thank you very much for participating and particularly for tolerating a freshman being here to assist in this process. Thank you very kindly. And we'll go ahead then and we'll stand adjourned until Monday at 1 o'clock.
Just starting more.